On July 29th, Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves went to the Neshoba County Fair, nicknamed Mississippi's Giant House Party. Big crowds, few, if any, masks, even as the COVID Delta variant was surging across the state. Speaking to fairgoers fanning themselves under a hot tent, Reeves called the CDC's guidance to once again start wearing masks, quote, foolish and harmful.
In our state, we are free people. It was Benjamin Franklin who said, freedom is not a gift bestowed upon us by other men, but a right that belongs to us by the laws of God and nature. In Mississippi, it is our belief in God that has gotten us through the last year and a half. And it is my belief in God that gives me great optimism for what is going to come for our great state.
A lot of fairgoers, too, were just not that worried.
As far as the cases going up, you know, if you get vaccinated, now they're saying you still get the virus. Well, look at the flu. You get a flu shot, people still get the flu. It's the same thing. It's a strain. It's a virus. We will get over it. Don't shut us down again.
A little over 2 weeks later, Neshoba County is overwhelmed with new cases. Across Mississippi, hospitals are running out of beds. They're short on staff. Dr. Ijlal Babar is an ICU doctor in Ocean Springs. He says more younger people are succumbing to this surge, and they're often incredulous that the virus they didn't worry about is now threatening their lives.
Now we're talking to parents. We're talking to young spouses. It's very difficult. It's very difficult. And the reactions we get are, you know, some people are just dumbstruck, some people are angry.
Thomas Dobbs is the state's health officer. He's been pleading with his citizens for weeks to mask up and get vaccinated. Standing in a new makeshift field hospital in the garage of the University of Mississippi Medical Center, Dobbs was surrounded by health workers and air blowers, and he said this.
I'm still baffled why anyone would think some random source on Facebook is better than the entire army of physicians, healthcare systems, doctors, nurses, researchers, who all want to do is end this dang pandemic.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Today on Point, the pandemic in Mississippi and what it'll take to turn it around. And we're going to start today with Nick Juden, state reporter for the Mississippi Free Press. He's joining us from Jackson. He's been covering the COVID story since the start of the pandemic, and we have links to Nick's reporting at onpointradio.org. Nick, welcome to the show.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks for having me.
Also with us from Jackson as well is Dr. Luann Woodward, vice chancellor at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. Dr. Woodward, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Woodward, actually, I'd like to start with you because you just heard that clip from Thomas Dobbs, who was standing at the University of Mississippi Medical Center in the field hospital there now. Can you describe when that field hospital went up and what's going on in there right now?
Certainly. And I was standing right by Dr. Dobbs when he made the comments that you aired just a few moments ago. So there's been a lot of activity here on the campus over the last week, and we were able last week to open a field hospital in the lower level of Garage B, which is one of our own campus parking garages. This field hospital was opened in collaboration and conjunction with Dr. Dobbs and his team at the State Department of Health, with MEMA, with the governor's office, kind of all parties involved, with the concept that bringing in this federal DMAT team would help us in our management of the overflow of these patients. All across the state, hospitals are simply at capacity. They're honestly at the breaking point. And the federal resources have been very welcome, and we're very thankful for them. But there is that, you could hear it in Dr. Dobbs' voice, there is that underlying sense of frustration. And one of the things that he said that day that we didn't hear on the clip you aired was, in fact, he said, you know, this didn't have to happen. We didn't have to be standing here where we are today.
Well, Nick, I'm going to come to you in a second, but Dr. Woodward, when you say hospitals are at their breaking point, what does the breaking point look like at the University of Mississippi Medical Center? I mean, like if you were to walk through the halls of the hospital now, what would you see?
So there are many components of that. And you know, when you think about things like the health system will fail and will, you know, what do we mean? Those are words that sound very dramatic and very dire. But what we mean by that is, number one, that our capacity is exceeded. And that has actually been the case now for some weeks. This is not new. Our capacity has been exceeded. And you layer on top of that, the capacity as a state has been exceeded. We are now in a systems of care for transport and transfer across the state of the critical care COVID patients, that this is a mandated situation by the state health officer, by Dr. Dobbs. So the capacity has been exceeded. The workforce is fatigued. The workforce is also experiencing their own challenges. On any given day, we may have 50 nurses who either are sick themselves, they're in quarantine, they have family members that are sick, they have others that they have to care for. So the fragility of the workforce is something that fluctuates a little bit from day to day to day. And when we get in this position where everybody is full, you have hospitals across the state that are putting out messages to their community and saying, please do not come to our emergency room. The emergency room is overrun. Please don't come to the emergency room. And you have hospitals where they are having to or considering having to tell ambulances, I cannot take another patient. So that's kind of what we mean about getting to the breaking point where you just can't make do anymore.
And Dr. Woodward, have you ever seen anything like this in your career in Mississippi?
This is the worst I've ever seen.
So Nick, do you want me to turn back? Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Woodward. I just want to turn briefly to Nick and forgive
sure.
me for cutting you off there. I'll come back to you, I promise. But Nick, can you give us a picture of sort of the state of the pandemic right now in Mississippi?
I mean, you know, today the weekend total was 7,839 new cases. Now, that's, I believe, the highest weekend total we've ever had. And the bottom line is, cases turn into hospitalizations, turn into intensive care hospitalizations, and deaths. So there's just no sign of a peak until we see the transmission slowing and declining. The state of the hospitals, the state of the schools, none of it is going to improve. So right now we're kind of grasping in the dark. We really are in uncharted territory.
Uncharted territory. But why is it uncharted though? Because I mean, this is, you know, nationwide, this isn't the first surge, right? This is what the fourth or even fifth surge that the United States has seen since the start of the pandemic. So can you just briefly give me some of the factors that you think have gone into Mississippi being hit particularly hard right now?
Delta is fundamentally different. I mean, it is so much more infectious. We're seeing this. And in terms of why Mississippi is having the worst possible experience with it, you know, it's hard to say. We are one of the least vaccinated states in America. I think we're second or first based on first or second shot. But we're just seeing, I think, a combination of a much more infectious variant, and people really got a taste of freedom after the vaccines came out and after the transmission slowed from the winter. It felt like we were getting our lives back, and it is really difficult to put that genie back in the bottle. So you run into people who are done with these health precautions and done with you know, putting their lives on hold, but a virus that is much, much more infectious. And the two are creating explosive transmission.
Well, Dr. Woodward, I'm sorry that I inadvertently cut you off a little earlier about how bad this is right now. And you said it's the worst you've ever seen in your career. I wanted to give you some time to go ahead and finish that thought.
Well, thank you, Magna. And what I was going to say is just that we have had disasters in Mississippi. You know, it is we're actually pretty good at responding to disasters. You think about the response and the work that was done after Hurricane Katrina and other disasters. But the difference with this is it's almost like an invisible enemy. You know, when a hurricane or a tornado comes through, there it leaves visible wreckage. For so many people who might not have been personally impacted by this, that lack of visibility, I think, to Nick's point, makes them feel like I'm out of the woods and I'm okay, I'm healthy, and I'm going to be all right. And this is very different within the duration. We are still just in the thick of it. In fact, right now, as I said, it's worse than it's been. And it's the frustration that I think is so evident because there's no finish line. We don't know where the finish line is. You know, a year ago, if I was talking to you, I would have been very hopeful and optimistic about the fact that before the calendar year's over, I think we're going to have a vaccine. We'll have access to a vaccine, and won't that change things? So in January or February, I would have thought, wow, by the next fall, we'll be in much better shape. And yet here we are.
Well, you know, I hear what you're saying about there not yet being an actual finish line, because that's also the nature of a pandemic as well. But when we come back throughout the rest of the show, we're going to talk about how to get Mississippi closer, at least, to envisioning what a finish line could look like. So Dr. Luann Woodward and Nick Juden, stand by. We're talking about the state of the pandemic in extremely hard-hit Mississippi right now. We'll have more when we come back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we are taking a close look at the state of Mississippi, currently in the grips of a terrible surge in the COVID pandemic. According to reporting from one of our guests, Nick Juden, who's with the Mississippi Free Press, last Friday, Mississippi announced more than 5,000 new COVID cases in one day. That was the third record-breaking day in a row, and leaving, in Nick's words, the 3,000 case day as a relic of the dramatic winter surge that happened before the vaccine. So smashing those numbers in terms of new COVID cases in the state of Mississippi. So as I said, Nick Juden joins us today. He's with the Mississippi Free Press. We're also joined by Dr. Luann Woodward, Vice Chancellor at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. And Dr. Woodward, you had mentioned what the toll that this terrible surge right now is taking on healthcare workers themselves. So if you and Nick could just stand by here for a moment, I want to turn to Alex Cobb, who joins us from Ocean Springs, Mississippi. She's an ICU nurse in the COVID ward at Singing River Hospital. Alex, thank you for taking some time to join us today.
Hi, Meghna. Thank you for having me.
So what's going on in the COVID ward at Singing River Hospital?
Man, so we are just seeing younger and younger patients that decline more rapidly. Right now in the ward I'm in, we have 12 beds, 11 are ventilated patients. These are not all super unhealthy, morbidly obese people. Some of these are fairly healthy with few or no existing medical conditions. And that's the really scary part.
And when you say younger and younger, what age ranges are we talking about?
19 is the youngest we have right now.
Okay. And that's really different from last year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. 19, a couple 20s. A good bit of 30s. I mean, these are young people.
So how have you been doing?
I mean, taking it day by day. That's really all you can do. These people, once they go on the ventilator, we can guarantee they are going to be on that ventilator for at least a week. And they may not come off. So we take it day by day.
Okay. And, well, I mean, one of the big differences, the biggest in terms of public health differences between now and previous surges is that there is a vaccine. Are
right.
any of your patients or their family members, As you well know, the head of the CDC, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, said a while ago that this is now a pandemic amongst the unvaccinated. Is that what you're seeing in your ICU?
Absolutely. Each and every ventilated patient we have is unvaccinated.
Okay. And are they or their families now saying that they had wished they had been vaccinated?
100%. I've spoken with several families now who have since gotten their vaccinations. And a lot of them beforehand say, you know, they were getting to it. They wanted to get vaccinated, but they had all this other stuff going on and they just didn't make it in time. So we are seeing a lot of that too.
And how do you feel about that?
I'm glad that people are kind of starting to see the light in getting vaccinated. But I'm also frustrated because there is such a large amount of our population that still doesn't believe that it's real. They have their theories of, you know, things such as it's a zombie apocalypse vaccine and it isn't real. So I have some frustration, but also, I think that if we can spread the word and make people realize that this is a real virus affecting real people, that these aren't just numbers broadcasted on the news, these are real life events, then maybe we can get those vaccinated numbers up.
Okay. So here's what I'd like to ask you to do, Alex, if you could. I think in hearing you say that once people end up in the ICU, they wish they had been vaccinated. Maybe we can convince some people now that the thing to do is to never have to show up in the ICU. And I think human beings respond very powerfully to detail and visceral explanation about what happens to them when they get sick enough to get ventilated. So do you mind taking a minute to describe to us what exactly the procedure is to put someone, you know, put a tube down their throat to help them breathe, to ventilate them? What is that actually like? And like, what does it do to the patient?
Well, first of all, there's a tube down your throat. We sedate you and paralyze you to get that tube down. And then we put you on a machine that controls how much volume, how much oxygen you're getting. And we have to try to keep you sedated while you're on the ventilator. And a lot of times it's just natural for patients to fight the ventilator. So we have to put them on a lot of sedation. And then once patients become ready, we can attempt breathing trials. To do breathing trials, we have to wake those patients up. So these patients have to wake up. They're in a fog. They don't know where they are. They don't know what's going on, to try to breathe on their own. And then if they fail their breathing trial, we put them back to sleep, try again. You know, it's like a daily thing, daily breathing trials. And eventually, after 2 to 3 weeks on the ventilator, if they can't come off, then we're talking to their family about a trach and a peg. So a trach in your throat, a peg is a feeding tube. So we're talking to family about that. If we could even get their vent settings weaned to come to that point. And then there's other complications that come with being on a ventilator. With COVID, we see a lot of blood clots. We see strokes. So being on the ventilator is one thing, but there's a lot of complications that play into effect that as well.
And do you mind if I just jump in here? And with those breathing trials, are you taking the tube fully out and letting people try to breathe on their own? Oh, no.
No.
Okay. So the tube's still in?
The tube is still in. We cannot take that tube out until we can guarantee that patient is going to somewhat be able to breathe on their own. Most of the time, if we're able to take the tube out, they have to go on BiPAP. But no, we do not take the tube out for a breathing trial. For the patient, it's hard because during a breathing trial, we have to wake them up, meaning turn the sedation way down or off. So the patient actually does wake up and they have a tube down their throat. So people need to understand that. I mean, we can't keep a patient fully sedated and expect them to breathe on their own through a tiny tube going down their throat.
I've read that patients feel during these breathing trials when they come off the sedation because the tube is down their throat, that like it's almost like they're being choked or suffocated even as you're trying to test their ability to breathe.
Absolutely. They are extremely anxious and it's very uncomfortable. And I think that people need to understand that that's part of the process. And if they get vaccinated, maybe they won't have to go through that.
Right. So there's one simple act to take that can avoid that terrible pain and long suffering that comes with having to go on a ventilator if you end up in an ICU. Thank you for that description, Alex. Really, I just think people need to know. Do you mind if I ask? I mean, like, you've seen multiple waves of this and your fellow nurses as well. What's the sort of the mental health state of the nursing staff there? And you heard Dr. Woodward a little earlier say that, people have been leaving the profession or at least leaving the state because it's just getting too hard. I mean, what have you seen?
I have seen a lot of frustration because it does not have to be this way. They do not have, if they were to get vaccinated, they would not have to get to a point of needing ICU level care. They could, you know, possibly still get sick, but they might not have to require this level of care. But also a lot of people are just sad. It's so sad to have to call the mom of a 24-year-old and have these conversations about ventilating their child, or, you know, call a 19-year-old and he's the only decision maker for his father and ask what he thinks about intubation and life support. So it's just, everyone is sad right now, just frustrated and sad.
How many nurses, when you started, when this pandemic started versus now, how many nurses that you've been working with are still at the Singing River Hospital?
In the COVID unit, there are 2 full-time nurses left. at this time that were still there. Most have gone off and taken other positions. A couple have gone to just totally gotten out of critical care and they're still in nursing, but they've gone to places such as the OR or the clinics.
How much longer do you think you can hold up being a nurse in the COVID?
I mean, I'm going to hold out as long as I can. I have young children, so I'm of course worried about my children. I'm really hoping that we can all come together and get vaccinated, because I'm really concerned about future variants coming out. So I'm going to hold out as long as I can until, you know, my own, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's Alex Cobb. Yeah. I appreciate your candor, though. I mean, I think not knowing is one of the biggest challenges right now. But Alex Cobb, ICU nurse at Singing River Hospital in Ocean Springs, Mississippi, thank you for all the work you're doing trying to save lives, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Nick Juden and Dr. Luann Woodward, I appreciate you listening along with us to what Alex is experiencing there in the hospital. Dr. Woodward, let me just briefly ask you, she was talking about the younger and younger patients there. Is that what you've been witnessing at the University of Mississippi Medical Center too?
Absolutely. And you know, the one thing that I would add to Alex's experience of being with those patients as they become more and more critically ill, that I know she has experienced, all of the nurses and physicians have, is when the patient comes to that realization that they're not able to breathe on their own and maintain, many times they're unable at that point to speak, but the look in their eyes, there is absolute fear and panic when you're talking to them and you're explaining, we are going to have to put you on a ventilator, we are going to have to intubate you and put a breathing tube down your throat. The patients that are able to hear what you're saying, it is a sense of panic and just fear in their eyes, because even at that point when they may not be completely mentating at their full capacity, there is something, they understand that they may not come off that vent. And that is just, it is, you know, blood chilling. But we are, just as she described, we are seeing younger patients. Out of the 141 that we have admitted in our hospital today, 22 are pediatrics. This is our all-time high. You know, in the earlier surges with this virus, we just had a handful of pediatric patients. But now, in fact, we are seeing younger patients. We are seeing younger adults. Honestly, exactly what she described. These are young people. They are in many cases previously healthy. This is unlike our experience with the Alpha variant. They are many times previously healthy. The runway between being positive, testing positive, getting the virus and testing positive, and needing to be hospitalized has been shortened. So the course is more rapid. There is really nobody out there, based on age or baseline health status or any other variable, that should feel that they can evade this virus. We are seeing it hit everybody, all ages, all health status. It is extremely contagious, and this is very different than what we saw before.
Yeah. And, you know, with any set of specific case numbers, I also like to give broader context as well to help us understand this. So while everything you're saying is absolutely true in terms of the rise of the number of even pediatric cases, in addition, there was a recent report by the American Academy of Pediatrics about nationwide pediatric COVID cases. And the American Academy of Pediatrics found that only 0.9% of COVID cases in children have resulted in hospitalization. So 99.1% of kids who come down with COVID don't end up in the hospital. But still, that 0.9% is an increase from the spring. So just some context there. But Nick Juden, let me turn back to you, because we have to start talking about why this is happening particularly viciously in Mississippi. From your reporting over the past many, many months, what do you think are, you know, some of the top reasons why the vaccination rates are so low in the state?
So there is a lot of mistrust, and there is a lot of confusion over what to do. And I think, you know, there's a lot of things that people understand that are like the common cause of why people don't get vaccinated. You have the conspiracy theories and you have the misinformation. But I really feel that one of the most important things to understand about why Mississippi has the lowest vaccination rate is we have some of the worst access to healthcare in the entire United States. I mean, we have worse outcomes. We have less people covered by insurance, people paying more for the insurance they do have. And this predates the pandemic. I talked to a lot of people who work out in some of the least vaccinated areas in Mississippi. And what I hear from them is people don't participate in healthcare as a culture. You go to the doctor when you're sick. Preventative medicine is a way of life, and it's not a way of life that everyone shares here. It's distant, it's expensive, and it hasn't been invested in. So without people being invested in having a primary care provider, being proactive about their health, you're going to have a difficult time convincing them to come get jabbed.
Oh, so culture of healthcare, lack of access to healthcare, being already extant challenges in Mississippi. But then on top of that, we've got the politics of public health right now, which we're going to take a look at when we come back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're taking a close look at the state of Mississippi, currently in the grips of a terrible surge in the COVID pandemic. I'm joined today by Dr. Luann Woodward, Vice Chancellor of the University of Mississippi Medical Center. Dr. Woodward joins us from Jackson. Nick Juden is also with us. He's with the Mississippi Free Press, with us from Jackson as well, and he was at a press conference given last Friday by Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves. I understand that at that press conference, Governor Reeves didn't allow anyone to Zoom in or attend the conference remotely, so the governor, state health officials, and lots of reporters were crammed into a pretty small room for this press conference, and over the course of the Q&A, a reporter apparently pressed Governor Reeves to encourage even vaccinated people to mask up for the greater good. And here is how Governor Tate Reeves responded to that.
If you really want to make sure that you, as a vaccinated Mississippian that has no symptoms, does not pass the virus to your fellow man, if you really want a virtue signal, then why are you here in this room? Why don't you go to your house, lock yourself up in the house? Because you will not give it to anybody if you don't see anybody.
Nick Juden, can you explain what happened in that moment?
I think the really important context for that moment is that the state health officer is standing right behind him, fully vaccinated, wearing a mask. So I just, what was odd about that press conference was really how inconsistent the messaging was. I mean, first he's saying we shouldn't shame anyone wearing a mask. or not wearing a mask. Then he says, if you're vaccinated and wearing a mask and you want a virtue signal, I don't get it. It was bizarre and hostile, and I don't know. I don't know how it really helps. You know, I think to hear the governor explain it, as he finally did at that press conference on Friday, the thinking is you undercut the vaccination campaign by returning to masks. And since vaccines are the most effective tool we have, we're not going to risk that. But I feel that the messaging has been pretty clear. We can see from the hospitals that vaccinations are massively effective at preventing cases. They're even more effective at preventing hospitalizations, and they're even more effective at preventing deaths. So I feel like you can say both things. The governor says that you can't.
Huh. Well, the state health official you were talking about was Thomas Dobbs, right?
And that's correct.
Yeah. And so we mentioned that a couple of days ago, he was at the field hospital at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. And, you know, he was talking about the sources of misinformation that are coming to Mississippians, particularly through social media. And I just want to play what he said.
These Facebook conspiratorialists are going to spread and run and have no accountability for the people who are dying. And we're here picking up the mess. So please, if you have questions, get your information from a real source. Don't listen to the nonsense. Vaccines do not cause infertility. Almost 8,000 Mississippians have died from COVID. How many Mississippians have died from the vaccine? Zero.
So that's Thomas Dobbs a couple of days ago at the field hospital at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. So Nick, from what I understand regarding vaccination, social media misinformation is going to forever be a huge part of this story, but that can be countered by political leadership, right? And the things that, you know, Dobbs, the governor, say as well. Correct me if I'm wrong, but if I understand correctly, Governor Reeves has been vaccinated. Members of his family have been vaccinated. He's spoken about that. Has he spoken even more clearly in, you know, exhorting, encouraging Mississippians to get vaccinated? Or has that been sort of a kind of, has he had to balance what I think would be his duty as the leader of the state of Mississippi with what we heard him say a little earlier in the show about the concept of freedom in Mississippi, and how people should be able to choose to go their own way? What has he been saying?
So as this Delta wave has gotten so much worse, all statewide leadership, I think, has finally come out and been more direct and much more clear about the importance of vaccination. We've seen that from Tate Reeves. You know, at that press conference, he gave what I think was his strongest statement in favor of vaccine so far. He said, "I've been vaccinated. My father's been my family's been vaccinated," you know, so I think we've seen more, but I think what people wonder is, could we have seen it earlier? Could we have seen it more intensely?
Okay, so let's talk about that for a minute, because it's not just what the governor has been saying, but it's the decisions that he and other leaders in the state of Mississippi have been making over the course of this pandemic, including how to get vaccinations available to as many Mississippians as possible. So here is Mississippi Democratic Congressman Benny Thompson, who spoke to the PBS NewsHour just last month, criticizing Governor Reeves for what Congressman Thompson says was Reeves' refusal of federal funding that would have helped save lives.
We have the lowest immunization rate in the country. Our governor refused to take the FEMA money. I have four counties in my district out of 26 where we didn't have a single vaccination site. FEMA would have paid 100%. And so now our people are at risk.
That's Mississippi Democratic Congressman Benny Thompson. So, Nick Juden, I heard you say that now perhaps Governor Reeves is speaking out quite forcefully to try to get people vaccinated. But in part, that's because of the, you know, what Dr. Woodward has been telling us about the imminent collapse of the Mississippi health system. Give us the context of what Congressman Thompson was saying there about decisions that were made earlier in the pandemic that could have made it easier or didn't make it easier for people to get vaccinated.
There has been a number of ways that you can take federal money or that you can just try to be dynamic in getting information out there, getting in touch with people, running vaccination clinics. I think, you know, what I have been wondering and what I have been calling for is that kind of dynamism, is just trying something new, because we are really, you know, we have been lagging in the very back of the pack for so long. Why not try lotteries? Why not try MSDH just recently started a project where they're reaching out to Black barbershops and they're funding them to do vaccination clinics. I feel like, you know, you can point out individual things. I think taking the FEMA money is one that Congressman Thompson felt very strongly about. But really, it's kind of do everything that you can, because we're so far behind that it kind of makes you wonder what isn't worth trying.
Dr. Woodward, I want to give you a chance to respond here, and then we're going to go to a superintendent who is, you know, looking at how education is going to roll out this fall in Mississippi. But I have to say, we have been talking about Mississippi's low nation, you know, very low vaccination rates in comparison to other states like Vermont, where it's above 80% there. I mean, This isn't by accident, Dr. Woodward. I mean, what would you point to as the reasons for the great disparity in outcomes that we're seeing right now in Mississippi?
So, just like everything in healthcare, I think, you know, it's multifaceted. So, to begin with, we have a population that is less healthy than many other states. When we started really feeling the impact of this Delta surge, honestly, the hospitals were close to capacity already at that point, because we were still in catch-up mode from healthcare that had been delayed previously. So unlike the other surges, we didn't have really ramp up capacity. So we've had a low uptake on the vaccinations, and that is just mind-boggling, honestly. There's been so much work done from the standpoint of Dr. Dobbs and his team and all the other health leaders across the state trying to get the word out that vaccines are safe and not to be feared. This is something that our own families have been vaccinated, but yet there is still a reluctance that is challenging for me to be able to align with rational thought. I think people just feel individually invincible in some way, and then they're surprised when actually they get sick or someone in their family gets sick. And only when it becomes personal do they feel compelled to then get vaccinated. Nick mentioned earlier that there had been a sense earlier in the summer, late spring and early summer, that we had turned a corner and people started getting back to normal type activities, whether it was, you know, weddings or birthday parties, or, you know, somebody mentioned earlier in the broadcast, Mississippi's largest house party, the Neshoba County Fair. Mm-hmm. So people got back into the comfort and the good feeling of doing those things that we consider normal, and stopped wearing masks. And now we see the state that we're in. And I think that it's really a situation where we need an all hands on deck approach. And I would say, you know, there's no need in going back and finding fault, but yet let's move forward, because what we've been doing these last few weeks has not been working. When you look at 5,000 new cases from last Friday, we can project that that's going to mean eventually additional 350 hospitalizations just from that one day, and potentially 100 deaths. And I'll tell you, we can't take it. We cannot take it. What we've been doing has not been working.
Dr. Woodward, forgive me for jumping in on you there. I hear you really loud and clear about the critical state of the system overall in Mississippi. And as well, I want to just touch on what this means, you know, for life more broadly in the state, just even outside of hospitals, because the pandemic affects everything. So let's take a minute or two to talk about education. And joining us now is Wayne Rodolfich, superintendent of the Pascagoula-Gautier School District, joins us from Pascagoula. Superintendent, welcome.
Hi, Magna. Glad to be here.
How are you doing?
Great. That's a lot of information you're covering today.
Yeah. So what is school going to look like? For us, we
opened our schools normally, and I made a decision with our school board early after comparing year-over-year numbers from last year to this year, because mask optional was the new favorite term of school districts this year. And we convened a meeting with our board to where we made it mandatory for all of our students and teachers to wear a mask in the first month of school, to be reevaluated in the month of September, so we could try and protect our people, as one of the ways that we would try to protect our people in our schools.
Was that a popular decision?
It wasn't a popular decision with some people, but for the most part, people got on board. I actually did a Facebook video that I published because I wanted people to be able to respond to it and get a feel for how they would react. And I've since done a second video to ask people to get vaccinated. We actually have some vaccination drives that are going to occur on our campuses in the school district. But we did not have one person come to our board meeting in public comment and say anything about it, because I believe we articulated the reasoning behind it very well, even though we have some people who are strong opponents of students not having the option of whether they can or can't wear a mask.
Okay, so that's great news, right? Because elsewhere on Facebook, people across the country, not just regarding what's happening in districts in Mississippi, but in other districts, you know, have been seeing like very angry battles going on over whether or not staff and students should be masked in school. So you're saying that you haven't had those battles in the district?
No, we've had one letter written by one parent, and we've had, so, you know, of course you're going to have the people who are going to be on social media that are going to make all types of comments. But as far as anyone actually formally coming and complaining to our board, that hasn't occurred.
Okay. So then what do you think the difference is between what you're doing and what we're seeing elsewhere? Is it, you know, the way that you've been communicating what the decision around masking was?
Well, I think providing the statistics, number one, also being in touch with our local healthcare system, Singing River Health System, Lee Bond is the CEO there, made sure that I contacted him to let him know what our move is going to be. I also contacted our state organization, the Mississippi Association of School Superintendents, to let Philip Birchfield know that this was the move we were about to make. And we were the first on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, and NWLX broadcast that we were going to be the first ones to require masks. And then, you know, in succession, multiple school districts that were mask optional have now become mask required.
So in a sense, like, the school districts could actually be leading in making it acceptable and providing the reasons for masking out across Mississippi.
Well, I think it's our duty locally to make that determination about what we can do to keep our children safe and our teachers safe, because you can't have school without both of those groups. And I also think it's important that we monitor what the numbers are, because these numbers this year are much higher than they were last year at the same time. And that was one of the one of the principles that we used to make that decision, was the number of students compared to last year to this year.
Mm. Well, Wayne Rodolfich, superintendent of the Pascagoula-Gautier School District in Pascagoula, Mississippi, thank you so much for joining us today.
I appreciate being part of your program.
Okay, so Nick Juden and Dr. Woodward, we literally have a minute left here, and still so much more to cover. Dr. Woodward, I'm wondering if you could give us a quick answer about whether or not you think that the underlying fragility of Mississippi's health system that has been revealed by the pandemic, that after, hopefully, knock on wood, we all beat back this pandemic, whether now there's going to be, you think there's hope for doing more about strengthening that healthcare system in the state in the long run? We've just got about 30 seconds left.
I have to say yes. I have to hold out hope that that will happen, that we've learned these lessons, and that we'll use them to create a better future.
Okay, and Nick, your thoughts on that?
I hope that we see people taking it seriously. I think that between the field hospitals and everything else, I hope we get that spirit of togetherness and we see a change.
Yeah. I have to say, Nick, that so often, as I've discovered throughout this pandemic, a guest's sigh tells us as much as their actual answer in and of itself. So even eloquent in his sighs as Nick Juden with the Mississippi Free Press, thank you so much for joining us. And Dr. Luann Woodward, Vice Chancellor at the University of Mississippi Medical Center, Dr. Woodward, thank you to you as well. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.